This is a reading of a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Education as a Force for Social Change. This is Lecture 10, the third part of a set called The Social Basis of Public Education, given in Stuttgart, June 1st, 1919. Today, it is extremely important that we see the deeper connections existing within human society. It is a symptom of our times that people are often satisfied with superficial opinions, that is, opinions gained through simply observing the surface of life. This has led to a situation in which one person considers something true and another person considers it false, but neither knows what to do with these opinions of true and false. People do not know what to do with these views, because although they can form thoughts about things that lie on the surface, they never achieve anything practical when they try to put these thoughts into effect. Reality does not accept superficial beliefs as easily as people do in their heads. That easy acceptance is one of the cancers of modern times. Another cancer is that people do not want to exercise the introspection that, at the right moment, might tell them that such ideas arise out of a self-interest they cannot manipulate into a social goal. We may not say that something we do in our personal interest is also a social deed. We see much of this sort of thing much more often than in years past. We repeatedly find that our desires have become the self-serving deeds of a particular group, and then people say that the results are consequences of what we wanted. Here I am only pointing out that today we must have the goodwill to look into things more deeply and to get past simple superficial points of view. Nowhere is the need to overcome superficial opinions more necessary, and nowhere is the goodwill to do this more lacking than in the area of education. If we in education are really to think socially, then we must turn our attention to even the most basic details. You have perhaps seen this in the two previous lectures on pedagogy, but I hope you will keep this particularly in mind as you listen now. Just look at people's experience, beginning as the youngest children in the lowest grades. When young children enter school, practically everything, except the needs and desires of the developing human being, determines what happens. As they progress from grade to grade, this becomes worse and worse. At an age when children can least tolerate it, something like the following occurs. The child goes to the first class of the morning. For the convenience of the faculty, the child has, for instance, mathematics or arithmetic in the first period. Then perhaps Latin, then maybe a period of religion. After that there is music or singing, but maybe not even that. And instead geography. We cannot more fundamentally ruin human nature than by teaching children in this manner. This absolutely destroys the child's powers of concentration. The class schedule, this nemesis of all genuine education, must be our starting point in socializing education. Today we must fight most strongly against class schedules throughout all the grades. Even when we only think of bringing health to the educational system, we must take care that the child remains with the subject as long as necessary at his or her developmental stage. Suppose, for example, that we discover at what age we should teach mathematical or physical concepts to a developing human being. Then we must not choose the worst path, setting aside 1 or 3 or 5 hours a week for this subject. Rather, we must devote a block to it, to this. That means we must allow the child to concentrate upon a subject for a certain period without being continually disturbed by other things. We must use a pedagogically and psychologically oriented anthropology to become clear about the stage of life in which we should, for example, teach children arithmetic. Then, when we focus upon arithmetic, we must focus upon it throughout the day. Of course, I do not mean that the child should do only arithmetic from morning until night. I mean it in the way that I once had to teach an 11-year-old child with serious soul disturbances. In that case, I attempted to proceed efficiently. Out of all the people responsible for educating this child, I reserved the right to develop the entire teaching plan when I wanted to focus attention on a particular thing. That is, I reserved the right to determine how much time the boy would spend playing the piano, how much time he would sing, and so forth. It was not my intent simply to fill his soul with a particular amount of learning material, but to direct his entire development so that his soul could concentrate upon something during a particular period of life. I intended that his soul reach a definite conclusion in a specific area of human development before turning to something else. To put it another way, we need to think about how much arithmetic we need to teach a child at a particular age, and then close this period so that the developing child has the feeling of having achieved something. Only then can we continue on to another topic. You can see from this that all the way through school, the basis of modern teaching contains something fundamentally destructive. There can hardly be anything more contradictory than when a student enters school and, as I did in my time, hears something like this. First period, practical philosophy, second period, history, third period, literature, fourth period, civics, and so forth. The intent here was not what it should have been, namely to avoid confusing the developing child. The intent here was simply to satisfy the organizational convenience of the school. We can say this completely without prejudice. Today we have one primary task before us. Given the pervasiveness of current thinking habits, it is hard to believe that society in general has an inclination to grapple with this task. This is what I mean when I say that today is the time of the great day of reckoning. People often believe we can be equal to the great day of reckoning if we just speak in large words. We can meet it, though, only if we approach great changes with inner courage, and do not lose that courage when we meet opposition to these great changes. Today the public holds something else as nearly indispensable, and that has great importance, particularly for the lower grades, namely the State Board of Accreditation. Nothing can be more detrimental for a proper development of cultural life than such official or semi-official review boards. What the school system really needs, and anyone who can look into the deeper aspects of things knows this, what it needs for genuinely fruitful development is continuous observation of the results of the living nature of teaching. No board standing outside the school can ever judge this, nor should it. You may not meddle in the methods or such of someone to whom, with due precaution, you have just given cultural self-determination and have entrusted the teaching and education of other people. This is something many people do not understand today. But with this lack of understanding, they also do not understand one of the basic conditions of a maturing cultural life. From this you can see the radical way we must change everything modern people accept as a matter of course, and even demand be increased. It is difficult to find anywhere a social program arising out of political party thinking that does not include some kind of official or semi-official accreditation of schools. Here I am not accusing anyone, including any of the parties, of anything. I am simply pointing out an absurdity that has occurred gradually in cultural life. We can easily study these cultural absurdities by looking at higher education. How have we actually developed higher education? We could still see that development in the second half of the 19th century. In the end, everyone who achieved something of world importance in German cultural life grew up during a time when the modern system had not yet destroyed the basis of a true spiritual development. Goethe certainly complained about all the hurdles placed in his way during his education. It would definitely be worthwhile to consider how what he writes about Professor Ludwig and other people in title Dichtung und Wahrheit, Poetry and Truth, would appear had Goethe been forced into a restrictive modern college at the age of 18 or 19. We need to look at such things today. What actually have we slowly destroyed? When the college preparatory high schools, which are such a nightmare in relation to modern standards, were the only way to prepare for entry into the university, they still had the characteristics of the old cloister high schools, which were really not so bad for their time. They still retained some characteristics that enabled students to absorb things that raised them to the level of a general view of the world. These schools still included basic courses in the curriculum, although only in the last 2 years. Of course, they usually taught what students should study in the second year, in the first, and what belonged in the first year, in the second. At least they studied it, though. A little remained of the old colleges, namely that in the first years, students had an opportunity to receive a general education that then enabled them to direct their studies toward a particular profession. Obviously, no one can achieve anything in a particular profession who has not gained an understanding of general human life through some form of preparatory instruction. Today, people consider it superfluous to teach students logical or psychological concepts. No one can advantageously study any area of cultural life without having previously obtained some idea of logic and psychology, and in a certain sense, without having gained the right to such study. Modern cultural life has completely destroyed these things. We no longer want to look at the human being, but instead want to train people according to motives quite foreign to cultural life. This has led to a situation in which our general intellectual and artistic activities no longer carry the imprint of a unified culture. Our cultural life has divided us so that we can no longer accomplish what we must accomplish. Those with experience in this area know how often modern people praise specialization. They emphasize that science and the arts have become so broad that people can be fruitful only when they master a particular specialty. This is, of course, obvious when seen from one side. However, an inner need for comfort has prompted people to embrace this most obvious thing with remarkable lust. Now, you need do nothing more than encapsulate yourself in some specialty, and simply because you have encapsulated yourself in a specialty, people will look upon you as a particularly distinguished person. Of course, no one who really values culture would want specialization to revert to an all-pervasive amateurism. We must work to so structure the entire system of education that people will understand, semi-consciously, that they can connect their specialities with the entirety of culture. That can happen only when higher education rests upon a foundation of general education. But then pedants will object by asking, "What about professional training?" We need only see how efficiently we can proceed when students have a general education and understand what is truly human before they begin training in specialities and professions. Today we are so deeply embedded in our perverse situation that we can be extremely well-developed in our specialty and total idiots about all the great questions of humanity. Today we have the curious situation that those who enjoyed only in elementary school education, and perhaps not even that, but were dragged through life. Let me read it again. Today we have the curious situation that those who enjoyed only an elementary school education, and perhaps not even that, but were dragged through life, have more and better things to say about the general human condition than those who received higher education and are quite excellent in their specific fields. Today we must fight against this situation if we want to send impulses deep into it, impulses that alone can lead to an improvement. If we want something to occur, We must not simply act superficially, as many people want. That is, we must not act in a way counter to the demands of reality. Today the problem is that we have carried this error so far that it is hardly possible to find the people needed for such a foundation of the colleges. We are in the terrible position that we can no longer find teachers for general education. The leading edge of our culture, the colleges, has fallen asleep. We experience it today when, in our colleges, a professor just reads lectures about some science from published class notes, so that students can simply buy them to drill themselves in preparation for an exam. This is even a rather common occurrence. But what does it really mean? It means that the students completely waste the time used to listen to the lecture, because what really occurred was only that the professor drilled the class notes into them. When a student reads the class notes, then everything that really needs to happen has occurred. It is completely unnecessary and superfluous for a professor to stand up at the podium and read the class notes aloud. Someone could easily say that I stand here before you, a Philistine, demanding the abolition of the faculty. I only want to point out that professors give lectures today with total disregard of the fact that we now know how to print books. Things simply read aloud really can penetrate the old noggin if read in properly written books. However, I would also like to make you aware that you can at best get from a well-written book a tenth of what you can get directly from a teacher whose teaching creates a connection between the souls of the teacher and the student. This can only happen, though, in a free and independent cultural life, where individuals can develop completely. It cannot happen where tradition, such as we find in universities and colleges, still has the same upper hand it has had for centuries, but only where individuals can be themselves right down to the smallest details. Then we could say about the practice of oral teaching that we have broken with everything that comes to humanity through publishing and illustrations and so forth. Because we would have thrown that out, we would then have the possibility of developing completely new capacities in teaching, which now only sleep in humanity. Such things are part and parcel of the current social questions. Only when we have the heart and mind for such things can we work toward what is so necessary today. Let us now look at the general social situation that results from the perversion of higher education. In my public lecture yesterday, I remarked that we find essentially no reflection of the true social situation in the economic policies of either the bourgeoisie or the proletariat, simply because we did not have the strength to develop a true social science. What has arisen under the bourgeoisie in place of social science? Something that people are quite proud of, that they never become tired of praising again and again, namely modern sociology. Modern sociology is the most nonsensical area of study possible, since it sins against all the most elementary requirements of a social science. Sociology seeks to show its prowess by avoiding everything that could lead to social will and social motivation. It simply records historical and statistical, quote, sociological facts, unquote, in an attempt to prove that human beings are a kind of social animal, living in a society. Sociology provides this proof, strongly though unconsciously, by bringing nothing more to the light of day than sociological platitudes, things trivial and generally known. Nowhere does a desire to discover the laws of society and their connection to human social willing exist. This is how this specialty completely incapacitates the human spirit. We must openly admit that the modern non-proletarian classes absolutely lack social will. Social will is completely missing because sociology replaced social science in the colleges that should have nurtured social will. an important sociology has replaced, excuse me, an impotent sociology has replaced a social science that could have stimulated people and pulsed throughout their wills. Such things are deeply rooted in cultural life, and we must seek them there if we are ever to understand them. We need only think about how different people's lives would be if what I spoke of in a previous lecture came to pass. If at the subtle birth of their sentient souls, around the age of 14 or 15, we directed students' attention not toward ancient civilizations formed under quite different social conditions, but instead introduced things close at hand, in modern life, the students could learn directly what happens in those fields, in the trades, and in commerce. People should learn all this. Imagine how differently they would then move on into life. Imagine how self-reliant they would be. Imagine how they would refuse to have forced upon them what people praise so often today as the epitome of culture, but what is in actuality nothing other than the worst form of decadence. Art, for example, can flourish only on the soil of a self-determined cultural life. Genuine art arises from the people. Art is, in its most noble sense, social. Someone who studies Greek or Roman or Gothic architecture, in the way often done today, knows very little. You can know what lies in Greek, Roman, or Gothic architecture only if you understand the social structure of the periods when these styles were current, and can see in their styles and forms, lines and impressions, how art swayed the human soul. What people did every day, right into their finger movements, was a continuation of what they saw when they looked at the things that gave them an opportunity to experience genuine reality, say, when they looked at an architectural style. Today we must marry art with life, but this marriage can flourish only on the soil of a free cultural life. What a pity that we take our children into schoolrooms where they meet with the most barbaric surroundings for their young souls. You need only imagine how it would be for children to learn their times tables in classrooms that were not decorated in the artistic way of today, but were decorated by an artist so that everything the eye fell upon was in harmony. Socially effective thoughts cannot exist unless a supporting spiritual impulse radiates into the soul during the time these thoughts form, an impulse that comes from a truly living environment. For example, artists need a much different course of life than they now enjoy while growing up. Today, those with an inner artistic desire have absolutely no possibility of experiencing life. If someone feels, for instance, a desire to become a painter, then life forces that person to dash off some kitsch as soon as possible, because it is believed to be important to create something that gives inner satisfaction. Of course, that is important, but what is really important is that the impulse for this inner satisfaction first find a path into life, so that the artist can feel the greatest possible satisfaction when he or she asks life what to create. You feel the greatest possible inner satisfaction when you feel a responsibility to take nothing from life that you cannot give back. Art is not served today when, for instance, a painter provides landscape paintings for people who understand little of them. On the contrary, art is thrown into the gutter. Thus, we have unnecessary consumer art, along with a barbarically formed living environment. Suppose the condition that my book on the social question attempted to bring about were to come about, so that any means of production would enter the social structure unencumbered for the simple reason that it can cost something only until its construction is complete. Imagine then how all individual egotistical interests would disappear, and how the desire to create for all of humanity would arise instinctively and intuitively. Imagine how people would search for ways to create for all of humanity, instead of ways to create for capitalists and their non-needs. Our primary task is to socialize in such a way that all cultural life does not fall under the wheels of state socialism. On this matter, our leaders have not the slightest inclination to look at what is right. Our leaders see the Spartacists and the Bolsheviks as scandalous, but neither group made themselves what they are. Who made them what they are? Our leaders. Our leaders have felt no desire to found a genuine popular culture. If our leaders had fulfilled their responsibilities, there would be no Bolsheviks and no Spartacists. Apart from that, the Spartacists and the Bolsheviks are just not the way our leaders paint them. Our leaders color them the way they do in order to present the world with a horror show that justifies their armies. But this is only a digression. Today, our leaders need to honestly look at themselves in the mirror, but they have little inclination to do so. You see, human development has not yet torn out of the soul what we need to improve it. It is still in the soul, particularly in the German people. However, the German people have long avoided developing the seeds of their own thoughts and feelings. The lower grades in school have inoculated them with what has turned the great German people into political automatons, machines blindly following the dictates of their government. There is a direct connection between all the terrible things we see around us and this wrong education, an education that does not develop free and independent people because it itself is not free and independent. The closer its ties to the state, the more comfortable the educational system feels. Educators have concluded countless conferences on education with the resolution that they have full confidence that the present government will do what is necessary in Versailles. Drum us out of the civilized world. In countless conferences, educators pass resolutions in complete support of the government. In truth, there is almost no one in the government who belongs there, and our greatest need is to admit honestly that everything occurring there is simply a continuation of the disaster that occurred in Germany during the tragic year of 1914. The errors in our educational system influence all these things. The failure of our educational system has robbed people of the ability to comprehend life's events. As I have already mentioned, just as a reasonable school system concerned more about concentration than about ill-conceived schedules would develop a level of self-reliant understanding and reasoning in people, in the same way, people would probably properly value will if education truly permeated society with the social arts. No one can have will who has not learned how to will through a genuinely artistic education. One of the basic requirements of the future psychological pedagogy is to recognize the secret connection of art with life, and in particular with the human will. We must base all future pedagogy on psychology. Given that psychology has been forced out of people and has disappeared from our education, the creators of this future psychology must be artists who still have a little psychology flowing in their veins. In scientific education, not even the tiniest bit of psychology remains. People could have such a good life if each person really worked for everyone and everyone worked for each person, because then we could organize production so that time would be available for such an education. People would not say much of the humbug of today if they wanted to speak honestly, and if we met the needs of cultural life, namely that people do both manual and mental work, something we must aim for in the future. Then, all over the earth, everyone, well, it could not be everyone, but at least an approximation of this ideal must occur, everyone would do their portion of manual labor, and no one would need to work more than 3 or 4 hours per day. It is possible to demonstrate this through an approximation. The needs of human development do not demand we labor more than 3 or 4 hours per day. That some have to work more now results from, we can say this without emotion or passion, as a completely objective fact, the countless do-nothings and coupon clippers roaming in our midst. We must face these things openly and honestly. we cannot correct the situation by only changing things here or there. We must change our education and our public schools, so that we educate people in such a way that they can learn how to use their judgment in life. Today our educational system raises human plants that have not the least ability to judge the things going on around them. For this reason, all the news that comes from Versailles, for example, is so senseless. No one can judge the importance of one thing or another, or the motives that cause one nation to think one way or another, or what the people of one nation or another need due to their backgrounds. This is why people do not understand us when we talk about such things. If only a little of the nature of the threefold social organism would soak into human understanding, then people would see why what threatens us from the West would drown all political and cultural life in economics, and why what impinges upon us from the East out of Russia is humanity's cry for the salvation of cultural life from economics, and why what impinges upon us from the East out of If only a little of the nature of the threefold social organism would soak into human understanding, then people would see why what threatens us from the West would drown all political and cultural life in economics, and why what impinges upon us from the East, out of Russia, is humanity's cry for the salvation of cultural life from economics. Two extremes confront one another, the West and the East, and we, in the middle, have a task to be watchful of the West and avoid its errors. We must watch the East and cultivate what we must do so it is not forced upon us, in decades, not in centuries, because humanity will be forced to do what it does not do voluntarily. Here in the middle of Europe, we have the task of cultivating what we can cultivate only on a foundation of the three aspects of the social organism. If Eastern culture were to predominate today, then it would flood the earth with nebulous mysticism. It would flood the earth with a theosophy foreign to reality. If the West were to predominate, then it would flood and tyrannize the earth with naked material life. Our task is to ward off these two terrible detriments to humanity through a reasoned threefolding of the social organism. In this way, economics and culture gain independence, and the state no longer can take these things so far that the West and the East crush us and bring us to our demise. An objective glance at the West shows us that now we must be attentive to everything coming from the Romantic people. Nothing could be more dangerous for us than to lose ourselves in illusions about the deep reasons that France primarily is working toward our demise. If we can restrain what comes toward us from France, then we can easily overcome the English threat. To do this, however, we need discriminating judgment. We need to recognize that, with only a few exceptions, all those people representing Germany, I am not certain how to say this to offend no one, all the German people negotiating the fate of Germany in Versailles are being used as pawns. We must see the plain facts of the situation. We may make absolutely no concessions to them in our inner judgment. If we can understand that today, then we can derive the first impulse necessary, particularly for public education. We can see the kind of people public education has caused to rise to the surface, and who now determine the fate of humanity. Of course, it is easier to make the most trivial judgments about what I really mean than it is to begin with the suggestions I have made, to look at the various fields of human activity and to determine the right thing to do in each case. Some time ago I spoke at our building in Dornach about the threefold social organism. Time passed, and a very strange plan popped up. Perhaps I may use this plan as a grotesque example of how we raise people today. In Dornach we have our building, and many people work on it. Then there are other people living in the area who have nothing to do. Now, I spoke about the threefold social organism, and afterward the obvious idea that we must begin somewhere arose in some heads. People wanted to begin a social experiment in some way. They proposed to do this in the most sectarian manner possible, namely to take a small area and cultivate the noxious weeds of selfishness. Then they could say that they had at least begun somewhere with something social. The idea was therefore to create a social community among the people grouped around the building and Dornach, and to put the threefold social organism into practice. People had developed plans for putting the threefold social organism into practice in Dornach. All I could do was to ask them what they meant this to be. If you undertook this seriously, then the first thing needed would be economic independence. Of course, you would then need to buy cows and to milk them and do everything else needed to create an economic oasis. The result, however, would be the creation of economic parasites, because every such economic oasis must have a connection with people outside it, and every such sectarian closure is nothing other than economic parasitism. In a closed economy, you can only live in social egotism, since when you shut things out, you then live at the expense of others. This is the worst form of capitalism. And now the question of the rights realm. I would like to see what would happen if you were to form a court. In the event you sentence someone for some wrongdoing, I would like to see what the Swiss government would say about your threefold community. Then we have cultural life. Since the beginning of the anthroposophic movement, we have fought against all obstacles to the creation of an independent cultural life. We have done this since the very beginning, and you do not even see that we have already begun this task. You have so little understanding for it that you think you need to create this too. It is of little value today when someone says we must certainly begin somewhere. What people usually mean by such a statement is the worst form of capitalistic egotism, that we must first begin by forming such a capitalistic colony. This lies extremely far from true social thinking. However, I am not intending to criticize individuals. I am the last person not to recognize the difficulties people have when they attempt to comprehend the great tasks of our times. There is something else I would warmly suggest to you, and that is, do not rock yourselves to sleep with illusions. If you want to create capitalistic egotism, admit it. Due to current conditions, you must be capitalistically egotistical for your own benefit. Admit the truth of this, because all genuine social life must begin with truth. You should not deny the truth in anything you say. You should never confront people with what is untrue, not even in the way you speak. Today, the call for free schools goes out throughout the land. But what does this really mean? A call could go throughout the land for the creation of a society in which everyone could provide the proper support for education. Education free of cost is nothing more than a lie. Hiding behind this lie is either the fact that revenue finds its way into the pockets of a small clique so they can found their school and thus gain mastery over others, or that this lie is dust thrown in people's eyes to keep them from realizing that some of their money is taken to support the schools. In the way we speak, we must always be conscientious in our striving for truth. The task is large, but we must always keep the greatness of this task before us. Not everyone, of course, can fulfill the ideals of anthroposophy as we have presented them for decades within a small movement. Some people need to take their professional positions into account, others their husbands or wives, and others the education of their children. Everyone must admit this without reservation, so that they come to realize how far they are from the real task themselves. The anthroposophic ideal requires the efforts of the entire human being. Many people cannot do that today, but they should not delude themselves that they have already done enough. Rather, they should admit the truth to themselves. On the other hand, people must fully understand that today everything stands or falls upon our efforts toward a true cultural life. Today, no one who does not dare to admit that radicalism must extend right into the details, like the change of the school class schedule, can come to a proper view of what cultural and social life need. Out of such details develop the snowballs that then grow into the avalanches of today's great cultural illnesses. Please think about this. We will speak about it again in the future. The end of Lecture 10.